Hey, you guys. Welcome back to my Flickers of Fear. This is my movie review series. This is really pissing me off because I recorded this entire video already, but when I went to edit it, I discovered that it had not recorded any audio. So this is the second time that I'm going through this, so please bear with me. Okay, so the movie I'm talking about today is another one that I had been wanting to see for a really long time. Another one that kind of got a lot of buzz around when it came out at the festivals and all of that stuff. And this is another one that is currently streaming on Hulu, at least as of this recording. So if you want to watch it, you can. This is a movie called Censor. So those who grew up in the UK in the early to mid 1980s will no doubt remember the whole video nasties kerfuffle. Now, obviously, I grew up in the United States, but I was a kid during that same era. I was like a tween or teenager during the early 80s. And I was also a total Anglophile, and I was a big horror fan. So I read a lot about stuff that was going on in the UK because I was really into British music and stuff like that. So I was pretty aware of all of the crazy shit that was going on with the whole video nasty thing. If you don't know what that is, if you're too young to remember anything like that, there was a time in the early to mid 1980s when largely like conservative politicians, you know, kind of more conservative newspapers and media and stuff like that, were basically trying to, either they actually believed or they were trying to convince everybody else that all of the problems that were going on in the UK at the time with like rising unemployment and crime and things like that could pretty much be blamed on gory horror movies. So you had, you know, figures like Mary Whitehouse and, you know, Margaret Thatcher was the prime minister and stuff like that. And they were just kind of decrying all this filth, all these movies that were just like turning people into violent degenerates and shit like that, blaming everything, you know, that was going wrong in the UK pretty much like on this handful of essentially harmless splatter flicks, right? So you even had like a number of horror films. I believe there's a list on Wikipedia. I think the list of like banned outright was like 31 or 34 films or something like that. But there were different ones, like different tiers, like of how much they got cut or, you know, whatever. But like I said, some of them were banned and it was actually like illegal to sell them. So as ridiculous as it sounds to younger people nowadays, and indeed it sounded ridiculous to me even back then in the early 1980s, like how stupid this was and I was a kid back then, you could legitimately, literally be sent to prison in the UK if you ran a video store and you happen to stock like The Driller Killer or Cannibal Holocaust or I Spit on Your Grave or something like that, like under the counter, and would like rent it to people on the DL, like they could absolutely come into your video store and raid it and take you to jail and shit like that, which is idiotic to think that just like some crappy ass horror movie is actually responsible for what is obviously caused by larger socioeconomic issues, which I don't think is controversial to say in the slightest, but here we are. Everybody likes simple solutions, so horror movies, that was an easy thing to blame. So this is kind of like the background of what the movie Censor is. So this was co-written and directed by a Welsh woman named Prano Bailey Bond, and this is her first film. So the movie is kind of set during this big cultural upheaval of the early to mid 1980s with a particular focus on video nasties, but there's also like a background in other things like all the strikes and unemployment and stuff like that, as I mentioned. And this is actually like a great setting for a horror movie. It's really like kind of ripe with possibilities. So this movie premiered at Sundance in 2021 and ended up winning the Méliès d'Or, which is kind of essentially like the top prize for the best European like genre of film. Also, the well-known British film critic Mark Kermode, also a big fan of this. He picked it as his movie of the week, like the week that it came out, and gave it like 5 out of 5 stars. And I'm going to have to side with him on this one. I really did like this one a lot. It's a very, very bold film, especially like for a first feature film, and it's pretty brilliant. I just had a really good time with this one. So the movie centers on this woman named Enid, played by Niamh Algar. Now, she's quite young, but she's real prim, like, you know, she's always has those granny blouses that are all kind of like buttoned all the way to the neck. Kind of like sensible slacks, like flat shoes. Her hair is always like pulled back in a bun. She's got like the reading glasses with like the granny chain and all that kind of shit. So she works for the BBFC, the British Board of Film Classification. So her job, essentially, it's not just her, there's several other censors there as well. But their job is to just sit around and screen, you know, the grisliest horror films imaginable. And then they type up recommendations about what scenes should be cut out, and, you know, once the scenes are cut out, you know, what rating is it going to get, or should we just ban this one outright because it's irredeemable? You know, if we cut everything out, there won't be anything left, or whatever. So that's kind of what she does. She just watches the films and then gives her recommendations, and then that's what they do. So, interestingly, it's kind of like across the board. Some of the, because most of the other censors are male, there is one other woman that she works with, and that woman seems to be like a little bit more affected by the content of the films, particularly like, you know, kind of rape scenes and stuff like that. But Enid, despite her being like kind of uptight seeming, the content of the films doesn't really seem to bother her as much as maybe some of the other ones. And this is mostly because she is like absolutely laser focused on what she calls getting it right. Like, she wants to do the editing. She wants to cut out exactly what needs to be cut out, and that's gonna just like be perfect and solve everything. I mean, basically, she seems to wholeheartedly believe that just, you know, for example, trimming out, oh, there's a bloody eye gouging scene over here, or a brutal rape scene over there, and we just trim those out, and that's gonna stave off like complete societal breakdown, right? She thinks that she genuinely seems to feel like she's protecting the population by preventing them from watching this kind of like manufactured violence, right? Now, despite Enid being like very, very priggish, she's still a really sympathetic character, even though it doesn't sound like it on paper, but she does actually come across as very sympathetic in the film, probably because you can tell pretty much from right away that her prissiness is sort of stemming from some past trauma or some emotional repression that she has going on. So we find out what's going on with that, like, not too long into the film. There's a scene where she goes and has dinner with her parents. Now, you can tell even before they are in the same room together that there's like a lot of tension between them. They're not hostile toward one another, but you can tell they don't really talk to one another. It's just like very awkward. So she goes to this dinner, and her parents hand her a death certificate, which seems ominous, but wait. So it turns out that Enid, when she was a kid, like a long time ago, she had a little sister named Nina. Nina went missing when she was 7 years old. Now, Enid was there when it happened. So this is something like, I don't think they say like exactly when it was, but since Nina was seven and it's like now, it seems like it was like 20 years or something like that. So I'm gonna say it's something like 20 years ago. So Enid was with her when it happened. They were playing together in the woods, but it seems as though she has blocked out most of the memory of what exactly happened on that day that her sister disappeared. You do see kind of like flashes of it, but it doesn't really like say exactly what happened. It's just kind of like her quick, like brief perceptions of or memories of it. Now, Enid, as you probably would, does blame herself for her sister's disappearance. You know, I could have done more, or, you know, whatever it is. And I will say that her dad seems to kind of low-key blame her as well. Not so much her mom, but it doesn't really come out much, but that is probably like contributing a lot to like the awkwardness like in their relationship. So, probably because of this, Enid has chosen to believe that Nina is still alive somewhere. Whereas her parents have pretty much come to the sad conclusion that Nina is probably dead. They're like, "Well, if she was alive, we would have found her by now. She would have come back. She would have contacted us by now. She must be dead. And we had this death certificate issued. We just want closure. And, you know, we just want to move on, like, as a family. It's like, you know, it was a long time ago. It's terrible. It's sad. But, you know, we just need to, like, live our own lives now." However, Enid sees this as kind of like a betrayal or like a slap in the face. So it does seem that her already strained relationship with her parents, you know, gets a lot more, like, sours a lot more after that. So there's that going on. It also doesn't help that she's run into a kind of a big problem at work. Now, she is acknowledged, like, among her colleagues that she is very, very good at her job. She's very thorough. But her coworkers kind of feel like maybe she takes this whole censoring thing just a little bit too seriously. Like, she gets too into it. Behind her back, at least one of them calls her Little Miss Perfect because she kind of overhears, like, two of the guys talking in the break room or whatever. But despite her perceived, like, uptightness, it turns out that her and one of her more easygoing co-workers had previously passed a film called Deranged. Now, I'm assuming that they're talking about the real film Deranged, which we talked about on this channel just a few weeks ago, which came out in 1974. Robert Blossom was in it, and it's loosely based on, you know, Ed Gein, the murderer and grave robber. So I'm assuming that that's the movie that they're talking about. So her and the coworker had passed this movie Deranged with only minimal cuts. And it so happened that one of the scenes that they left in the movie, intact, showed a man eating someone's face. It further turns out that very recently there has been a real crime that has occurred in Britain in which a man killed his wife, ate her face, and then drove to his kid's school and shot both of his children. The perpetrator claims he does not remember committing this horrific act, so they end up calling him the amnesiac killer or whatever it is. But he does helpfully tell the police that I'm pretty sure I watched this movie Deranged shortly before doing it. So, you know, which kind of like fuels everyone's just go, oh my God, a movie like made him do it. You know what I mean? So there's that. So there's like a media circus kind of like ensues. And it turns out that somebody leaked the information that Enid was one of the censors that passed the film with that scene uncut. So she starts getting threatening phone calls and, you know, unwanted tabloid attention. Like they start kind of following around and taking pictures of her and shit like that. So there's also that going on. So in the midst of all this stress, Enid and yet another one of her co-workers kind of get their latest film that they're going to be reviewing. The producer brings it. So this is an older movie, and it's called Don't Go in the Church. And it's directed by this sort of like shadowy cult filmmaker by the name of Frederick North, who's a little bit, he's kind of well-known like in underground film circles. So the first scene of Don't Go in the Church ends up bearing an uncomfortable resemblance to what Enid remembers about the day her sister Nina disappeared. Enid, like starts freaking out, like, looking at, like, watching it. She's like, so she starts to become convinced that the guy who made the film has to know something about where her missing sister is or what happened to Nina. So then she manages to get her hands on one of Frederick North's newer films. Like, she goes to this kind of corner shop, and the guy there has, like, some illicit shit that he's not, like, some banned films he's not supposed to have, and he keeps them under the counter, but he's willing to, like, rent them to people that he knows, like, because he knows he's not going to get narked on. But she comes in asking him, like, for Frederick North films, and he's like, look, babe, I don't know you, and I don't have any of those. What are you talking about? You know what I mean? Because you could totally get arrested, right? But because she's a censor, and because she's seen all the gory movies, she's able to, like, kind of, like, leverage that knowledge into saying, yeah, look, I'm just a horror movie fan. I know how I look, but, you know, I'm into that kind of stuff. So he's like, okay, well, don't tell anybody I got this. So he gives her a videotape of a newer Frederick North film, which is called Asunder. So she takes it home and watches it. This movie features an actress named Alice Lee. And while Enid is watching the movie, she's like watching this actress, and she's kind of like keeps rewinding and then she freeze frames on the woman's face. And she becomes convinced because of how this woman looks, like her eyes and her red hair and stuff like that. She's like, that is my sister, Nina. So she extrapolates that the filmmaker, because he had made Don't Go in the Church like a long time ago, which mirrors exactly what she remembers of the situation in which Nina disappeared, like the same location and like a similar situation. She's like, this filmmaker must be the guy that took her, like he abducted her, and now he's making her be in these exploitative films, and she slowly becomes consumed by this idea. So overall, I mean, this is a great movie. I was like really, really entertained. It's interesting because it starts out as sort of like a pretty standard, I don't want to say it's like buttoned up, but it's kind of like follows the arc of the Enid character. So it's very kind of like staid and traditional at the beginning, but then it just gets wilder and wilder as Enid's sort of like tenuous hold on sanity like starts slipping away. I especially too like how this isn't a black comedy, but it does have some real sly satire in it of the whole video nasty phenomenon. Because one of the things that always bothered me about that whole debacle is sort of like the hypocrisy behind these censors saying, well, we can sit all day and watch the sickest horror movies ever made and somehow not be affected, and then, but we can't let the public see it or they'll all turn into like crazed maniacs. And I'm like, well, so they're kind of like saying that, well, that makes them better. And I know that particularly in Britain, there was like a class kind of thing going on behind it too. Because like, oh, those poor people or those working class people, they can't handle like seeing this fake gore, these movies. It'll turn them into animals. But it's like, you know, us with our university educations or whatever the hell, we can sit here and watch it and like watch it and be detached. And we are kind of qualified to like tell other people what they can handle and what they can't. Because you would think if they're whole premise that watching this kind of stuff makes you more violent or makes you want to act out like what you see in the movie, then you would think that all the censors would be like serial killers because they just sit there all day and like watch the shit and probably multiple times because they have to sit there and like rewind through it and be like, oh yeah, we need to cut that little bit out and shit like that. So they probably like watch these fucking eye gougings and rapes and all this just all day fucking long and think about it all day fucking long. And you would think that if that premise was true, then they would be like the worst offenders. They would be serial killers because that's all they do is sit there and watch it like all day long at their job. Obviously that doesn't happen. So again, their whole entire premise is flawed, which to me, like I said, seems very hypocritical. So the movie does kind of, it's not real heavy handed with that point, but there is like a lot of a little bit of like satirical things sort of about that. And I do kind of like the way that inverts the sort of censor character into like maybe, I don't know if I want to say it's like it's something you don't expect, but I do kind of like the way that it plays with her character in that way, in that sort of, you know, in that sort of context, you know what I'm saying? I also like how the movie has, and this is even on the movie poster, I think, because the movie poster has a tagline like, you can't edit reality or something like that. So the movie also has kind of a theme of talking about our own memories and our own past traumas and how our brains tend to like edit events to remember things the way we would rather remember them, maybe rather than how they actually happened. So the final kind of sequence of censor really kind of like drives this theme home, I think, because by that point, Enid has pretty much fully embraced the idea that all she has to do is trim out like bits of her memories or bits of her life or whatever that she finds like either inconvenient or dangerous or unsavory or whatever. And if she just does that, then like all the problems in the world will magically go away. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, as I said, it's not funny, but it does have like a satirical sort of like edge to it in that way where it's just showing the ridiculousness, like, of the hypocrisy of thinking just cutting a couple seconds of film out here and there is gonna, like, cause all the crime in Britain to go away and stuff like that. Because she does actually seem to believe that, but she's obviously also got, like, some big problems. So, gonna say, love the lead performance in this by Niam Algar. Like I said, it was kind of like a hard role to pull off because on paper, you know, Enid sounds like a very unlikable or like an insufferable character, but she absolutely is not. She actually comes across like very, very sympathetic. And you can kind of understand where she's coming from, even as she kind of like starts losing the plot like later on in the movie. Also, some other great British actors that you will probably recognize in this as well in like some supporting roles. Got Michael Smiley in this, who was in Kill List. He was also in A Field in England, which both of those I've reviewed. Also, Nicholas Burns is in this. He was in The World's End. So this is just a great, I mean, especially for our first feature film, this is just a fantastic movie. It's very clever, very ambitious, and I think that she really pulled it off. And it's really like a great kind of look into this sort of like tumultuous time in history, which sort of focused on specifically the video nasty thing and the whole censorship thing of horror in particular, but also with a bigger backdrop of, you know, the kind of socioeconomic, you know, kind of upheavals that were going on in the UK at that time. Also kind of goes a little bit into addressing maybe like the dangers of repressing your negative emotions and maybe kind of like the importance of having something like a healthy outlet, like horror movies, for example, in which you can explore your dark sides, like in a safe kind of way. So if you've seen Censor, or if you would like to see it, let me know in the comments and we'll have a discussion about it. As I said, it's streaming on Hulu at the moment, at least as of this recording, and I'm sure it's streaming elsewhere as well. But let me know what you thought about it in the comments, and that will do it for this Flickers of Fear. I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.